This is The Efficiency Point, a podcast from Modern Pumping Today magazine. I'm MPT editor Jay Campbell, along with our producer Seth Saunders. You can find us online at mptmag.com. And please rate, review, and subscribe to the show on any of your favorite podcast apps. On today's show, we speak with Chris Moody from the American Water Works Association to get an update on the organization's current efforts advocating for clean and potable water throughout the country. We also dip our toes into the waters of the June issue of MPT, but first, some headlines. The coronavirus spread shows no signs of going away within the United States, with over 23,000 new cases reported just this past week. 10 states saw a record number of new COVID-19 cases this week, with 23 states seeing increasing numbers, according to Johns Hopkins University. New models released earlier this week are predicting the virus's new epicenter will move out of New York City and somewhere in Florida. Nationwide, more than 2 million people have been infected thus far. The virus continues to have an impact on our industry, especially when it comes to educational and networking events that have been postponed or reimagined to better fit public safety concerns. Two more events have joined that growing list just this past week. First, the Turbo Machinery and Pump Symposia, sponsored by Texas A&M's Turbo Lab, held annually in Houston, Texas each fall, has been rescheduled. The target date for the new TPS will be in early December, still in Houston. Event organizers cite the risk to participants from social spread. TPS traditionally features several classroom-style learning events and hands-on demonstrations in addition to meet-and-greets on the exhibit floor and communal dining. So it's very easy to see how that could be a potential hotbed for viral spread. And another response to the pandemic, WEFDEC 2020 will be taking place this October, but it will now be a fully virtual event renamed WEFTEC Connect, which offers attendees an interactive education, exhibitor showcase, and networking experience online. Registration for WEFTEC Connect will open on July 13th, with programming scheduled from October 5th through the 9th. According to event organizers, the, quote, cancellation of our October meeting in New Orleans was necessitated by the coronavirus pandemic that has made it inadvisable to hold the traditional WEFTEC in-person meeting. Currently existing governmental orders at both the state and local level restricting the congregation of groups and other social distancing regulations, together with travel restrictions, will prevent a large number of our attendees from attending the meeting, which forces us to make this difficult decision. We do look forward to having WEFTEC return to New Orleans in 2022. WEFTEC Connect will be a unique virtual event using the latest online learning platforms to create an immersive experience for attendees, carefully shaped to be responsive to feedback gathered from water professionals on preferred education and participation options. Some of the events that WEFTEC Connect will include, that's going to be difficult to say than just WEFTEC 2020, there, Seth. Some of the events will include a blend of live and pre-recorded technical content, data-driven connections between participants, one-on-one appointment scheduling with exhibitors in virtual meeting halls, live chats between individuals or groups, virtual meeting rooms for networking and product demonstrations, and access to educational content and exhibitor showcase. Seth, what do you think about that? Would you, if you had an opportunity, would you attend a virtual trade show?
Yeah, I think I would, Jay. If I was planning on already going to the trade show, especially, wanting to learn about new improvements, seeing the new technology, meeting people, unfortunately, you can't do that. But I think this virtual trade show is the next best thing that you could do. While you can't have one-on-one direct contact with an individual in person, you could still have all those discussions done via online and potentially actually have time to discover more rather than having to physically walk around.
So I can see that. Yeah.
I think, while it's not as great as being in person, it definitely has some pluses and it could set a precedent for perhaps other trade shows in the future as well.
Oh, I definitely think so. I think, just thinking on my own experience of going to trade shows, sometimes you're on the floor, you're you're in one booth talking to one person, and other people roll up, and sometimes it's almost like a, you know, like a avalanche. You know,
right?
It can get overwhelming. So something like this, where you have one-on-one appointment times, that, you know, once you're in a Zoom call, you're kind of locked in. You know, so yeah. I can definitely see some of the benefits. WEF Tech Connect will enable water professionals from around the world to learn and share with peers, no matter their location, and learn more at weftech.org. We'll include a link to that in the show notes for this episode. And while existing trade shows are adapting to the pandemic, others are just kicking off. The first virtual Hot Water Forum will take place over 4 days in July and two consecutive weeks, exploring cost-effective ways to improve the efficiency of hot water systems. It will feature 16 interactive breakout sessions and plenty of networking opportunities. Attendees will hear from industry leaders and network with fellow professionals in a community that is passionate about cutting-edge technology, system design programs, and policies. Breakout sessions will explore how hot water systems can help cities reduce greenhouse gas emissions and promote electrification. They'll also look at multifamily systems, grid-connected water heating, optimal plumbing design, and model utility programs. The plenary session, Making Efficient Hot Water Systems Accessible to All, tackles this timely topic from three different perspectives: city policy and planning, energy efficiency, and plumbing and contracting. We'll include a link to the registration for the first ever Hot Water Forum, a virtual event, in the show notes. The American Water Works Association is the largest organization of water supply professionals in the world, and its members represent the full spectrum of the water community: public water and wastewater systems, environmental advocates, scientists, and others who advocate for effective management of the world's most important resource. We're pleased to have Chris Moody from AWWA's Government Affairs Office join us today to discuss the impact of the EPA's new guidelines on PFAS regulation. Thanks for joining us, Chris.
Thank you.
Before we get started into AWWA's position on the new EPA guideline, would you mind giving our listeners a brief history of the EPA's approach to PFAS regulation?
Sure. Yeah. And I think it's helpful just to kind of think about, you know, where things are starting at with PFAS. So, it represents a class of, you know, thousands of different chemicals that are all perfluorinated alkyl compounds. The chemical makeup of these gives them really unique properties that, you know, they first were used for the Manhattan Project, and now they're used for everyday things like, you know, water repellent for our jackets. So they're really ubiquitously used throughout the country and the world, really. EPA's history on regulating PFAS began in the mid-2000s with both the regulatory and voluntary efforts to reduce use by industry of certain PFAS. So we saw a phase out of major manufacturers using PFOA and PFAS, and then we saw some regulatory action that actually limited a broader class of PFAS. But as you know, more contaminated sites have been discovered and public concern has grown, the agency's efforts have focused on some stakeholder engagement a few years ago. And then just last year, they released the PFAS Action Plan, which, you know, is really their way of putting out the detailed plans for a multi-barrier approach to PFAS. So, you know, it involves research, risk communication, contamination, addressing, you know, how to clean up a lot of things. And so since that plan is released, the agency is focused on developing, you know, different analytical methods. And then, you know, most recently getting to more the hot topic of the day, the proposed regulatory determinations for two particular PFAS in drinking water with consideration to a broader set of PFAS.
And AWWA recently put out a statement of support. I mean, not to jump the lead here, but obviously they want to have the most clear regulation possible at the federal level. What are the four guiding principles that AWWA has put out with relation to PFAS regulation?
So for us on PFAS, the four guiding principles really boil down to a commitment to public health protection. That's our main goal as an organization at the end of the day. And then our second one is a fidelity to the scientific process. So ensuring that we have you know, any drinking water standards that do get promulgated are actually, you know, the most effective they can be, and they're based on science. And then an investment in research so that we can support that process, and in ensuring that we can have, you know, effective protection of source water. So making sure we're not letting the chemicals just blatantly get put into the environment and then pushed off to the drinking water.
One of the things that struck me was that learning that PFAS regulation may actually vary from state to state, from municipality to municipality. What kind of discrepancies are out there, and why is that not ideal?
Well, ideally, you know, states would be moving ahead of EPA on PFAS, would be on the same page using consistent science to make those decisions. And more than half of the states have taken action, you know, as you mentioned, to address PFAS at the state level. And that includes, you know, different policies to protect the source, different policies to, you know, kind of control the use of it in commerce. And then there's policies to maintain, you know, specific water quality for drinking water, such as a drinking water standard. But the variation in the state policies really, it can create a big challenge for communicating for water systems. So, you know, they're kind of at the center of this whole debate. And, you know, when you have different standards out there, you know, it starts to confuse the public, especially when you have different levels, different chemicals being related, when you have different groupings being used. So, you know, if you start to break out all those things, there's variations across the board. So you don't see consistently a certain level that they get regulated to. You don't see a consistent set of PFAS that are regulated or are a concern. And so that's where, you know, we start to have, you know, a little bit of issue with, because it starts to create a big challenge for water systems to communicate about it.
And Chris, where do you see the federal role going forward in PFAS regulation?
Well, you know, as we noted in our, you know, we provided comments back to EPA on the proposed regulatory determinations. And, you know, one of the comments that we tried to highlight to them pretty significantly is that there's a great deal of research that still needs to be, you know, attained and addressed specifically for PFAS. You know, we have a pretty good understanding of a few specific chemicals, but once you start to look at the broader class, you know, that starts to dwindle off pretty quickly. So, you know, the EPA has already made some headway with some of these gaps, and they do have some efforts in progress to address those, but, you know, there's still significant gaps across the board for, you know, anything from toxicity to the treatment of specific PFAS, you know, even the analysis. So being able to detect it in drinking water is still, you know, a challenge on the whole. We expect the agency to continue to advance that science and prioritize research where needed. But according to the PFAS action plan, we also expect that the agency is going to be following some proactive and protective strategies for managing PFAS. So, you know, furthering different regulatory actions to protect the source, for instance, you know, we do know there's a couple different efforts in progress.
And if I'm working at the municipal level, or if I'm at one of these water facilities now that, like you said, is on the forefront of facing this debate, where should I turn to get the best information?
There's lots of different resources. You know, our organization, we have, you know, people that maintain different fact sheets. So I mentioned, you know, that we've been tracking different state to state activities. So if we can include in maybe some podcast notes, we have a whole webpage dedicated to PFAS, and a lot of those fact sheets are really good, high quality, you know, kind of quick bits of information. And then we have references to other places that have some as well.
Oh, we'll definitely put a link to that in the show notes for this episode. And I guess before we close out, where do you see AWWA's outlook on reducing drinking water contamination for the future? I mean, what are some of the next issues that you think we should be looking out for?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, water systems are prepared to address contamination in drinking water, you know, however they need to be. There's technologies available for the removal of various PFAS chemicals, and, you know, water systems are willing to install these things as long as, you know, they're what the science says is needed. The first line of defense for maintaining drinking water quality is going to be adequate source protection to prevent the contamination in the first place. So, you know, this is especially critical for PFAS issues, given its widespread, you know, use historically, but also presently. And, you know, AWWA has emphasized this to the EPA and Congress repeatedly, including as part of our recent comments. You know, at the end of the day, advancing public health with sound standards for PFAS should not be limited to drinking water, but should include standards to prevent the contamination in the first place. You know, and this is going to become more of an issue because, you know, the issue with PFAS isn't going to stop in the next year or two. This is going to be a recurring issue as we move forward. And, you know, we know that there's a whole host of other, you know, challenges that water systems are trying to address, ranging from disinfection byproducts. We have a recent lead and copper rule that's coming to play. And so, you know, as more of these issues start to emerge, we're going to have to make sure that our resources are used in the best way possible.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for the work that you and the AWWA are doing. I know a lot of our listeners are already members of the AWWA, but if somebody's listening out there and they want to join the cool kids, where should they go for more information and how could they apply for membership?
If you just go straight to our website, it's awwa.org. And, you know, you can click on the membership and get involved. There's lots of different ways to get involved. You can volunteer. You know, it's a great organization. It's great networking. You know, I have a lot of friends that I've met through the organization. So highly recommended.
And there's also the annual ACE get together.
Yes.
One of the biggest events in the water industry. So I'm sure we'll see a lot of our listeners and readers out there. Well, Chris, thank you again for taking time to speak with us. And we're happy to share this information with our listeners. We love to share outside-the-box technology with our readers, and in this month's Pump Solutions section, you can get a closer look at how Able Pump's all-electric diaphragm pump is changing the game in double diaphragm pumping. It's a positive displacement pump for municipal sludge, slurries, paste, and anything that a traditional air-operated diaphragm pump might be used for. And pumps, fans, and compressors account for about 60 to 70% of total electrical energy use by U.S. manufacturers. However, goals to improve pump efficiency and reduce energy costs may not carry a high priority to owners and operators. Their primary focus is usually on just keeping the operation running smoothly. But in June's maintenance and reliability section, friend of the podcast Ben Keezer of Applied Flow Technology argues that the time has come for what he calls going beyond efficiency standards in the first of a two-part series. Listeners of the show might remember that Ben Keezer was our guest on the previous episode of the podcast, advocating for different tips on proper pump selection. If you're not a current subscriber, please just go to mptmag.com, click that subscribe tab for a free 12-month subscription starting with the June issue. This has been The Efficiency Point, a podcast from MPT Magazine. Follow us on Twitter at ModPumpMag to see updates on our next episode. Today's episode was produced by Seth Saunders. I'm your host, Jay Campbell. Stay safe, and thank you again for listening.